Blog Talk Radio.
Listeners, and I should say listeners from around the world, and I do mean around the world. You know, we've identified 50 countries from a world map that our provider, Blog Talk Radio, provides us with each broadcast, identifying the countries that listen to us with each broadcast. So thanks to all of those folks around the world that listen to our broadcast, and especially those, of course, from America. Our broadcasts cover the globe because our antenna is 22,000 miles above the Earth. Hey, I'm retired Captain of Eastern Airlines, Neil Holland, founder and one of the many hosts over the years to do these broadcasts. 14 years come November. Well, hey, that's next month, isn't it? I see we have with us today a young lady that has just recently come aboard, and her name is Emily Boyer, and I want to say hello to Emily, and let's listen to her good television voice, because she was in television. Hey, Emily, how are you doing?
Hi, Neil. Yes, it's great to be here today. Thank you for that lovely intro. I much appreciate it. I'm glad to be back for, I think, my third show so far with Airline Radio Hour. So I'm so glad to be here. And special thanks, like you said, to our listeners for tuning in today. I know we had a few technical difficulties last week, so I'm just, like I said, super excited to be back on the air with you all.
Good to hear your voice. Yes, we have had some technical difficulties, Emily, and thanks for hanging in here with us. And we hope some of our listeners will come back and not be discouraged that we are unable to, I think, the last two or three broadcasts. Blog Talk Radio had problems, and they admitted it, and we tried to get it out on the Facebook page, and now we've got a website, so maybe we can put some information about how that all works and comes together. But thanks for being with us, Emily. And As I see any of the phone numbers that come up on my producer's board during the show, I'll open their microphones up, and we hope that you'll get involved and tell us your memories and just add your comments to our show. You know, I believe every employee who has worked for, my case, Eastern Airlines, or any airline for that matter, remembers that day when they were told they were hired, whether it was delivered over the phone, in my case, by letter, or in person by the person in charge of that department. We probably have not forgotten the rush that came over us. At least I can still think about that and remember that. And we know we are now with the world's, in my case, considered the world's greatest airline. I've always thought about that with Eastern, and I'm sure anyone that's been hired with an airline considers the same about their airline. And as Captain Jim Harris, who is one of our hosts, tells me every time we chat over the phone, it was the happiest day of his life when I was hired by Eastern Airlines. Now, I'm going to send out Get Well Quick, Jim, because his wife called me earlier before coming on the air and told me that Jim is down now. He's got some write-ups, I guess, as we would say, with an airplane that needs to be fixed. So she's taking him to the doctor Monday, and hopefully it's just not very serious, and it'll just be a light cold or something. Jim, if you're listening to us, get well quick and come back, because we like your comments. Jim's from Tennessee, and he's got that southern voice. And as a matter of fact, I think, well, Emily, you're from North Georgia, aren't you?
Yes, right near Tennessee. Okay. I've been to Tennessee there a few times. I haven't traveled like there a lot, but I did go to Ruby Falls, Tennessee, and Gatlinburg, and Knoxville. I've been there as well.
Yeah, great. Well, I'm from North Carolina, and I guess my voice, even though I'm getting old and my voice has become what I told Emily, gravelly, sometimes it works for you, especially if you have that deep voice, which I don't. But at any rate, I'll do the best I can with what I've got. But after we got that call or that letter that we were hired with, whether it's with the airlines or I'm sure you probably felt the same way, Emily, when you got the call from the television station that hired you as an anchor. My golly, that must have been very exciting for you, wasn't it?
Yes, I remember that day just like you were saying. It's just like it was yesterday. I had graduated college, and it took me 6 months of searching afterwards to find a job. And I had been doing tons of interviews, lots of them not working out. But I finally had like two down to the wire where I was made it past the third round. And then I knew that I was going to go with WSAW in Wausau, Wisconsin, which was my first journalism job. And I knew I was going to get the information later that day. So I drove out in Jackson, Georgia, where I was living at the time, and I found this scenic view of this like pretty field. And I told myself, whether I hear that I got it or not, at least I'm going to be in this peaceful place surrounded by nature. But of course I got the call, and they told me that I would be moving to Wisconsin, and I was so excited, and it was such a blissful moment. So I can definitely understand that, you know, those stories translate across every job and industry for those people who are really going up for their dream job.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, area code 512, who might that be?
Hey, this is Jim Harris here.
Hey, Jim Harris, well, your wife just told me you were bedridden.
No, I'm not bedridden. I've just been ill.
Okay. Well, I shouldn't laugh at that. Being ill, and you're here on the phone here, and good to hear your voice.
Yeah, you sound great.
Oh yeah, I'll be all right, I think.
Okay. Well,
I caught something really bad 2 weeks ago. I don't think it was COVID or anything like that, but I had just an awful flu, and it took me 2 weeks to shake it. So I think it's just that time of year where all the germs and bugs are going around.
Jim,
whatever it is, it's been making me feel bad.
Okay. Well, get well fast. And
I'm going to do my best.
I just mentioned the fact that you, during our telephone chats, which we have frequently, that you always tell me somewhere in that conversation before you hang up, usually it's at the beginning or at the end, it was the happiest day of my life when I was hired. But let's hear you say that again, Jim.
The happiest day of my life ever was the day that I went to work with Eastern Airlines, 31 October 1966.
Okay.
What a great job, a great bunch of people. It was a career. They're family. It was my family.
Yeah. Well, maybe you remember this because, and Emily, it might have been a little bit different with the television stations that you were employed with. But after we received that, the exciting thing came next, which was the training. And by far the best training in the industry, I thought, was Eastern Airlines. And arrangements were made back at home for the absence it would take us as a new hire to be an Eastern employee. Many of us received our training in Miami and eventually in the city they were going to be domiciled. And uniforms were next, were ordered, and sometimes they would arrive after we were on the job, which happened to me, by the way. I remember I went down to the field shop, and you remember the field shop, Jim Harris, because that's probably where
I
you
sure do.
Your first
Absolutely.
Uniform too.
And, oh yeah, I'm sure I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I tell you what. That was so much fun.
It was. It was. And to see that uniform with those wings on it and those gold stripes.
Oh, yes.
I felt, and I'm sure you did too. I didn't get my uniform right away. I don't know what happened, but maybe they were out of stripes or out of the material to make my uniform, but they were tailor-made. And
yes.
I flew my first two trips as a co-pilot in a business suit. I wore a business suit instead of a uniform.
Yeah.
But Eastern didn't mind, and I guess they understood. And in many cases, we left our cities and towns to relocate, just like you did, Emily, in a different state or a city. And some would find it necessary to room, especially with the airlines, with another fellow employee until we were able to rent or purchase accommodations for our families. Many of us represented were by a trade union, too. We had to join a union in this case. I don't know about you, Emily. Were you required to join a trade union of television broadcasters?
Oh, I was not. I think they done away with the union maybe 2 years before I got there. I had just missed that.
Okay. Well, many of us were represented by a union, and in our case, it was the Airline Pilot Association, which was headquartered in Chicago. And each airline, it was called shortly as ALPA, A-L-P-A, Airline Pilots Association. So we were on probation for a period before we could make any kind of permanent arrangements because we were being considered after about 15 weeks back in those days. They had write-ups. The captains would write us up as to how we performed, and we tried to make it those 15 months, which we would be then a permanent employee of the airline. I know a few Eastern people still have their first paycheck they received issued by Eastern Airlines.
Oh, wow.
Matter of fact, yeah, somebody posted it on the website, on the not the website, but the Facebook page. A son posted their father's, I guess the son found it in the belongings, and posted it on the Facebook page, his first paycheck. I couldn't make it out too well, but it's there.
Wow.
On the Eastern Airlines Retiree Association Facebook page. I sure wish
That's
I had
incredible.
Kept mine. Yeah, or at least
yeah, good
taking
file
a picture of it.
Too.
Yeah. Did
yeah.
you take
a picture? Probably would have lasted a little longer.
Yeah. Well, I can remember what I was paid on my first payday.
Absolutely.
No, really?
Jim, you do too,
wow.
don't you? I made $475 for the month.
I made five and a quarter and then six and a half.
Yeah. Okay. Hi. Yeah, you came a few months after I did, a couple of years
later.
I did,
uh-huh.
And they'd gone up on the starvation salary. And
it was that, wasn't it?
Yeah. And when you consider the fact that $475, we had to live away from our homes in our domicile, therefore sharing, we all shared, we had an apartment in Washington, D.C., where I was based, and there were four of us living in an apartment. So it wasn't that bad, but keep in mind, we've got family that's waiting to come to be with us at our permanent location, which was Washington, D.C. for me. And I think you were sent immediately to Atlanta, weren't you, Jim?
No, I was in New York. I lived at 2332 93rd Street, which is over by LaGuardia.
Okay. Yeah. Still remember the address.
I do.
I'd like to have your memory, Jim.
Yeah, and that's the truth.
You're pretty sharp.
Well, you can imagine.
It seems to be pretty good.
Well, you can imagine what it costs to live in cities like New York, Chicago, Washington, Newark. But we did. We somehow managed to do it. And
how it worked out for us. Hey, look, that was my dream job. I had dreamed about all my life.
Yeah.
I was so happy to be a part of that.
You weren't going to tell them to take this job and shove it, were you?
Absolutely not. Hey, to this day, even I'd still pay them to let me do it.
Well, yeah, I think we all thought about that when we were flying. You know.
Oh, absolutely.
Those were just a few reasons why, ladies and gentlemen, we love the place where we worked and why the Eastern family is alive and well, because we all seem to think the same thing about the company we were hired by. You know, from the early mail planes to the wide-bodied aircraft like the L-1011, just a moment, folks. I'm sorry, just something came up, folks, but the airplanes that they flew from the mail planes, the 757, that was the most modern airplane that toward the end there. Eastern always had the latest and best equipment in the industry. And the first, in most cases, we were the first airline that got that airplane. From the passengers calling the airport to reserve a seat on a flight to the That was in the early days. That's the way you made reservations. But Eastern was the first one to really have the first modern reservation system, which we call back in the day System 1. Well, at any rate, we can go on and talk about our airlines and anyone, whether it's Northwest Airlines, TWA, Pan American, I'm sure they feel the same, and I hope they do. Because it would be very difficult to fly with a company that people like Frank Lorenzo tried to run, when he bought Eastern and some of the other airlines and ran them out of business. And
I think I'll come on that.
Yeah.
I won't forget.
Yeah, I was reading the book that you co-published, Neil, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, clippings from the magazine, and there's a few commentaries in there about how Frank Lorenzo was liked or lacked of liking.
Well, he was what they call a corporate raider, and he raided one too many airlines because Congress, the first person that I know of in transportation, and the only person, I believe, to this day that has been barred from ever having an official capacity with an airline, Congress, outlawed him from ever being associated with an airline.
I like that part a lot.
Yeah. Well,
did he come in there with a bunch of cost cutting, and is that why we don't have any leg room when we get on a plane these days?
Well, not necessarily that. It was he was just raiding. You know, there's a good movie that I believe Michael Douglas starred in it, and it was called Wall Street. And I think it was called Wall Street. And it was a story of a person that was running an airline. And I think it was kind of written along the lines of Eastern Airlines and Frank Lorenzo. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it was Michael Douglas. Wasn't that the name of it, Jim? Wall Street?
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. It was a 1987 thriller called Wall Street with Michael Douglas, just like you
said.
There
you go. And, Emily, that's about the time that Frank Lorenzo had stuck his nose into a lot of airlines' business, along with People Airlines. You remember People's and New York Apple Air and New York Airlines and Continental Airlines? Boy, he had his nose into everybody's business.
Wow. That seems like a conflict of interest, maybe at the least.
Yeah. Now, I got, let me see, I've got a 615. I've been ignoring this one. I'm just going to open up your microphone. Area code 615, you've got a live telephone now. Tell us where you're from.
Hey, Neil, this is Harry.
Hey, Harry. Good to hear from you.
Good
I was
to
about
you.
To announce
good to
your
hear the
name.
Show. I've been missing the show.
Okay.
we had some technical difficulties, Harry.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
We did.
Last few weeks.
But I was going to start out right now. I've just about run out of this stuff before we get into our reading of some of the comments that were made on Facebook about commuting and see what you guys think about it. But before we do that, I'm going to let Harry's wife, Linda, tell our first story. It's a short one. It's only about a little over a minute. But let's hear what Linda will read out of one of the articles that we, Harry and myself and Linda, did last year or so, with several episodes based on stories that we found in different publications. So, Linda, let's hear from you here right now.
This is called My Joan Crawford Experience by Fran Dowling. It's from the book The Wings of Many. Starting my flight attendant career in 1962, I was working in the coach cabin of a DC-8. After the meal service, I went to first class to get my crew meal. While in the first class galley, the captain rang for his steak dinner, and I took one to him. A few minutes went by, and the senior flight attendant asked me where Joan Crawford's steak was. So I had to explain to Mrs. Crawford that I had made the mistake of giving her meal to the captain. Seeing my embarrassment and declining the alternative of chicken, Miss Crawford replied, "Just don't give away my champagne." I took a bottle of champagne from the galley and put it in a bucket with ice, added a ribbon from my suitcase and tied it around the neck of the bottle. Then I took a paper cup and I wrote "Reserved for JC" and gave it to her. She laughed and asked if she could keep the paper cup. At that point, I wanted to give her the entire DC-8.
I like that story, Harry. Yeah. Now, Emily, you might be too young to remember who Joan Crawford is or was.
Sounds so familiar. Remind me, and I feel like she'll come to mind.
Well, she was an actress back in the 40s, and she may have started in the 30s, but she'd been around a long time. I never did think she was a beauty. Did you, Harry, or Jim Harris?
She was passable.
She was passable? Okay.
Oh, gosh. I see her picture here. I think she's pretty. Obviously, she went acting into her later years, so...
I
might have seen a few movies of hers.
I'm sure you have. She married somebody and wound up with a lot of stock with somebody. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah. Well, I know back in those days they were stars, and as young people we remembered them. As a matter of fact, I was talking yesterday to my best friend in high school, and he and I met graduates from high school about the same time we graduated. He'd just gotten out of school, and he married his, and I went on to college and found mine. But at any rate, I told him, I said, you know, Darlene, your wife reminds me so much of an actress that I used to like to see her movies, and I could not think of her name. And of course, you always remember when you hang up, in which case
right.
I did.
It comes to you later.
Yeah. And Darlene reminded me, Larry, if you're listening to the show, because you just tell Darlene that actress, and she was a beautiful lady, is Jane Powell. Jane Powell. Do you remember Jane Powell?
Yes.
Harry, do you remember?
I do remember Jane Powell, yeah.
Yeah.
She was a dancer.
Dancer, that's right. Yeah, beautiful lady, Jane Powell.
They were classy people.
They were. They really were. Yeah. Well, I've got one more story, and then we'll talk about commuting for the rest of the show. And, Harry, you're going to deliver this. See if you remember telling this story. It's not
all
too
right.
long a story, but it's a very good story. I like it.
We recently heard stories of Eastern Airlines' role during World War II. Here's another story from that same period, from the book From the Captain to the Colonel by Robert Serling, and we're going to learn about a specific employee during that time. Stewardesses weren't the only distaff breakthrough resulting from the shortage of able-bodied males. Women were hired in ever-increasing numbers, and they were assigned tasks supposedly beyond their female capability. One was a young lady named Margaret Maggie Robinson, and her story is the story of all. Maggie, now Eastern's manager of consumer affairs, joined Eastern St. Louis reservation staff in 1944 and gives a vivid account of what it was to work for an airline in the war years. Eastern had stopped serving St. Louis temporarily when service was cut back, but the station was reopened in 1944. With the station manager, a chief agent who was like a supervisor, and five girls. We had a small office on the second floor of the Lambert Field Terminal. Our reservations table was borrowed from the coffee shop downstairs and covered with green oilcloth. We recorded all reservations on 3x5 cards and filed them in a cigar box, arranged by days of the month, alphabetically, and current. Eastern was very strict about our wearing correct uniforms. I remember we had to have blue shoes, and sometimes we had to borrow ration coupons from friends in order to buy a pair. And we figuratively had to wear many hats. Even if you were assigned to reservations, you were also expected to work the ticket counter prior to flight departure. 45 minutes before flight left, you rushed from reservations down to the counter and began to check in passengers. We had big limousines bringing people from the downtown hotels, and I always wondered how we could ever take care of a full plane load, 21 passengers. Actually, there was almost as much to do checking in 21 as there is today checking in 200. There'd be a long manifest on which you had to record each passenger's weight, destination, and baggage. How many pieces, their weight, and the check numbers, plus whether he'd need limo service when he arrived. You started talking to passengers the minute the first one came up to the counter and could never stop talking because if you did, you were dead. We used to keep one eye on the clock, seeing how close we were to flight time. After everyone was checked in, you'd lock up the counter, put on a uniform hat, and run outside to help load last-minute baggage after you made the flight announcement. When the last bag was loaded and everyone on board, you'd pull back the steps, salute the captain, and run back to reservation where you'd start teletyping information to downline stations. How many limos would be needed at each stop? Who's making connecting flights and so forth? We had three flights in a day and three flights out, so you were kept pretty busy. St. Louis was a terminating and originating point on the system, with the first inbound flight arriving at 5:30 in the morning. I worked from 4 a.m. to noon, 6 days a week. There were no such benefits as shift differential pay, overtime pay, or holiday pay. On your day off, you'd usually come out to the airport to see how things were going and invariably you'd wind up helping out. All this for a starting salary of $125 a month. But the airlines were like that, not just in the war years, but before and for a while after the war. The training program for reservations consisted of reading Eastern's traffic manual. There was only one desk in reservations, and I'd have to study in the terminal lobby. Once you read through the manual, you were considered trained. We did have a training school in New York, and I wanted to go there badly. But once I had read the traffic manual, they figured I had enough of an airline education. Rickenbacker himself gave her the nickname of Maggie. She met him 4 weeks after she started working in St. Louis and will never forget that experience. The station manager had warned her, "Don't say anything to him unless you know what the hell you're talking about." Captain Eddie arrived and, as usual, began chatting with the employees on duty. For some reason, the topic of a conversation centered around the difficulties of landing at certain airports, and Rickenbacker mentioned one that presented a particular problem because the beam sways, meeting the electronic rain signal. Maggie didn't know a rain signal from a spark plug, but she was positive she was well-versed on beams. After all, Lambert had one that revolved from the top of the control tower. "I know just what you mean, Captain," she blurted. "I came to work every morning at 4 o'clock, and I see it going around and around."
In that case, Emily, she was talking about, he was talking about, or she was talking about the rotating beacon at the airport.
Yeah,
identifies
beacon.
An airport.
Okay, I was about to say, I think that one went over my head a little bit, or there was an inside joke that I missed. So appreciate the explanation. That makes more sense.
Well, you're going to learn a lot about aviation if you stick around with us. And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. We might make you an honorary pilot or flight attendant, whichever one you want. Raise your right hand.
Oh, I would love that. Something I wanted to say that I didn't get to mention on earlier shows is that my grandma was actually a Delta flight stewardess. And so that is my claim to fame here with the aviation industry.
Okay.
I posted her picture on our website, airlineradioshow.com, if you guys want to go visit. It's the picture titled Sandra Lori Boyer on airlineradioshow.com.
Folks, it's a new website, and it's being brilliantly, I might add, created by Emily, and I hope you'll go to it. It's just airlineradioshow.com. Just a string of letters, airlineradioshow.com, and you'll see the beautiful picture of Emily's grandmother in a Delta Airlines uniform. We were very fierce competitors, Emily, I must tell you, so sometimes you might hear one of us from Eastern refer to Delta employees as Brand X.
I gotcha.
Or Dirty D.
All right, no
harm. Or Dinky D or Dirty D.
Yeah, Dirty D.
Yeah. Well, no hard feelings there. She actually didn't stay with them her entire career, obviously not, because they had the rule about stewardess not being allowed to be married. She went on to be a school teacher, and so I'm perfectly fine with a little friendly competition on that.
Okay.
And then
All right.
I did also want to mention that you can find our past episodes. If you ever miss a week or miss, you can't listen to the full show on here on Blog Talk Radio, you can go to airlineradioshow.com and see our past episodes and some blogs and stuff and keep up with basically everything that we're doing.
Oh, Emily's going to make this an exciting website. And
with Neil's help, of course.
No, we're so very happy that to have you with us, Emily, because you know so much about communications. I think that was your major at University of Georgia. She's a bulldog,
yes.
Folks. She's a bulldog.
That's right.
Georgia bulldog.
And that's why I'm used to the competition, because there's a lot of passionate SEC fans, and a lot of my good friends support the opposing teams and colleges. So it feels like home to me.
There you go. Well, it's a great website, and a lot of things are going to be appearing on it as we develop it, as she develops it. And so we hope you'll pay a visit to us, and you can even buy some delicious popcorn on it if you would like to get a popcorn and help support the show. And because we're going to add some things to it, and we need your help. So we'll be telling you more about how you can help us with that. And we want to add a lot of stuff to that page and also to Blog Talk Radio, our radio broadcast that we do. Now,
yes,
let's
a lot
turn
more
to
come.
Yeah, there you go. Let's turn to commuting. Commuting. What the heck is commuting? Well, I guess when you go to work every morning, you commute from your home to your work. And it might be just around the corner, or it might be from New York to Australia. Yes, you heard me right. We had Eastern Airlines had a that actually commuted from New York, the three airports up there, and lived in Australia. I forgot whether it was Sydney or what city it was that he lived in, but it was Australia, where the kangaroos roam around. And now he was able to do that because he would bid his trips so that he would fly all of his trips and still keep legal with the FAA requirements of getting the rest that was required by the federal regulations. And then he would fly all of his trips, and then he would have about 10, 12, 14 days off, and he would go to Australia where he lived. Well, now that is extreme commuting as far as I'm concerned, unless you get on a spaceship and you go up to the space station up there. That would be a further commute. But let's talk a little bit about commuting. The first one that I received on Facebook was from a Northwest employee, Jerry Seymour. And Jerry said he was a ramp rat. Now, a ramp rat, I think, refers to someone that works out on the ramp. Baggage handler, it could be a cleaners or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah, ramp rat, he calls himself. And he says he was living in Florida and working in Minnesota. Well, that is quite a commute.
Wow.
And he goes on to say, yeah, it was tough times, folks. It was tough times. And he had many worried moments and too many double shifts to commute. Mm. Valerie Olson, her remarks were about commuting. Now, this is something that I thought was worthy of some replies, which we did get, or she did get some replies from her comment that she posted. She said, I was commuting. Now, this is Valerie Olson. I was commuting from Las Vegas to Los Angeles, and while on the tram to the terminal, I wrapped my arm around the pole to steady myself. I felt a pain on my right breast. When I got to Sydney, SYD, I don't know where the Sydney is. I guess that's Australia. I did a self-exam, and sure enough, I had a distinct lump. So as soon as I got home, I saw my doctor and found out I had breast cancer, but because I caught it early, I had a lumpectomy, I think is what it's called, and have been cancer-free for 15 years. I'm retired now, and every time I get on that tram, I think of that pole and commuting that saved my life. Wow. And
wow.
She got a few comments about that. Judith Dotson from Eastern says, well, my father, Walt Thompson, was an Eastern pilot. He lived in Austin, Texas. Hey, that's right next door to you, Jim Harris.
That's right.
But I flew out of Houston. He had what he called his airport car. He didn't care how many miles were on it. It didn't matter if it got left out in the sun for a week at a time. It looked like heck, but I think he got 200,000 miles out of it. It had the license plate EAL ACE, A-C-E.
That was his car. Then if he got 200,000 miles, that's a good, you got your money's worth on that car. That's an ace for sure.
Probably a Toyota.
Definitely. I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Well, I had a commuter car, but I'll tell that in just a minute. Claudia Brown at Eastern Airlines also said, I commuted for 2 years to Atlanta when I moved to Dallas, Texas. It was the late 1970s, and I never had a problem getting a seat. Vicki Coles, Northwest Airlines, commuted for most of my career, she says. I was based in Minneapolis, Seattle, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. I lived in Seattle for 6 years while based there, and then I moved to my hometown of Vancouver, Washington. My final trip before retirement in January of 2008 was NRT, I don't know what that designation is, to San Francisco, SFO, San Francisco. I was a purser on Flight 28 with a wonderful crew. Two of us on the crew were retiring, and the crew had thrown us a fabulous retirement party the night before at the Radisson Narita Hotel. Quick flight time homes, less than the schedule of 8:30. So I arrived in San Francisco. That was on time for the morning Alaska San Francisco Portland flight. I thought I had made it on time. Alaska foiled that idea by canceling the morning flight. That happened to so many commuters. They had a flight out of Oakland in a couple of hours, so rather than wait until the afternoon flight out of San Francisco, I hopped on BART. I guess that's a Bay Area Rapid Transit for Oakland. It was a Saturday, and there was maintenance on the San Francisco side, so the BART train stopped between stations for 3 hours. I finally made it to Oakland. The plane was still at the gate, but the agent was a total... She's got a couple of stars here, and you know what she's saying here. And he shut the door early. So I sat for another 3 hours in Oakland and finally made it home at 1900 hours that night. It took 8 hours to fly from NRT to SFO and almost 12 hours to get home. I was so glad to be retired.
She said that was her last flight.
That was her last flight. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that is just too much. That makes me so tired to think about it.
Jim Harris, did you do any commuting?
I never did. I always lived. Well, I take that back. I was based in New York for a while, so I had to commute a little bit.
To
Tennessee. But it was not all that bad.
Yeah.
And then, of course, and I was based in Atlanta. I lived about 20 miles down the road from the airport.
Yeah. Harry, you didn't.
Your commute was just by car then, right? Or
of course, yes.
Okay, gotcha.
I was at 222-mile marker, Interstate 75.
Pretty good commute. There you go again with your memory.
There you go. Harry, did you do any commuting as crew scheduling?
No, I never did, but I remember several of the pilots that did. Bob Vitale comes to mind out of North Carolina.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry Noyes. I think Jerry Noyes was out of Jacksonville.
That's right. He was. He lived here.
And Lou
Rabbit?
Alexis, I believe his name was, out of
New Orleans. New Orleans.
And but there were several, and I always thought, man, you guys are really taking a chance on making it here. But as far as I can remember, nobody ever missed a flight for that. So.
Well, let me ask you this, Harry. Since you were in crew scheduling, and I always thought about this, and I had heard some things about some of the pilots, chief pilots especially, in different bases, were very much opposed to someone that was assigned a base, like if your domicile was Atlanta, they expected you to live in Atlanta. And then came along bad weather. And that's the time that especially the New York airports really came to appreciate commuters. Because
yeah.
I was up there, temporary duty, TDY, trying to make a little bit of extra money, working out of the domicile. I was there during the blizzard of 78, when there wasn't anything moving around, not even a cat or a rat, because the snow was piled so high in the streets. Well, I was real close to LaGuardia Airport. And because the regular crews flying those airplanes at LaGuardia were stranded in their driveways. They couldn't get out of their house and drive down the driveway to go to work. Well, here I am right across the street almost from LaGuardia, living at a commuter pad. And guess who crew scheduling would call? The commuters. Right, Harry?
Yep, that's right. Whoever you could get, you know.
Yep.
I wasn't there at that snowstorm, but I remember, man, the big problem used to be Buffalo. Man, they screwed everything up all up and down the East Coast. They had terrible snowstorms back then.
Yeah. Well, they got me, and by golly, I was happy to fly the trip and get out of that snow up there. But that was a voluntary commute. And because I was working out of base, and any time you could bid a trip out of your domicile, they were going to pay you a little bit of extra money. So it was worth it to me. And I even drove my little Volkswagen up there, a little Beetlebug. I call it Beetlebug, a little yellow Volkswagen. I think it was a 1965 stick shift. And by golly, it was one of the very few cars that I saw moving around the streets of Queens over there where I was living, you know, next to LaGuardia.
Yeah.
Because that little old Volkswagen had a rear engine, put the weight on the rear wheels, and by golly, I could move around where other cars were skidding and slipping their tires.
Oh.
So,
yeah, that's before rear-wheel drive cars were popular over here, but yeah, it sure did.
Yep, it sure helped.
The only thing about that Volkswagen sure didn't have much of a heater, did it?
No,
no.
So you've owned one too, Harry.
I did. You know, the worst part was the defroster. You had no defrost, man. That was terrible. But anyway, that was.
And I got mine caught on fire in Atlanta one time going from the airport to home in downtown Atlanta. The Volkswagen actually caught on fire. Somebody came alongside of me on I-85, I think, went through the center of Atlanta and tooted its horn at me. And I looked in the rearview mirror, and by God, all I could see was smoke coming up out of the rear end of my engine. But that's another story. Well, let's see. I got another commuter story here. Rod Hove, I think it's Hovde, an Eastern guy. He said, I commuted for 2 years from Atlanta to Seattle, working five on and five off until the 1986 flight attendant strike. I owned a home north of Seattle and had no apartment in Atlanta. I would take the red eye from Seattle to Atlanta, sleep a couple of hours in the Atlanta crew lounge, quiet room, work 5 days with short layovers, and leave Atlanta on flight the fifth day for home. One night while waiting for the flight to Atlanta, I noticed two A300s at the terminal. About that time, the cockpit crew for the second plane walked into the waiting area. They recognized me, and the second officer came over and told me they were deadheading the plane back to Atlanta so I could go with them and have the whole plane to myself. What a great deal, I thought. I got on the plane and very quickly fell asleep. I was woken up by the second officer while we were making our approach for landing. Unfortunately, we had been diverted to Houston. I was panicked.
Oh, no.
I had to get to Atlanta or I would have a trip failure. All flights to Atlanta were overbooked. I was lucky enough to have the captain of a DC-9 allow me to ride the cockpit jump seat. It's been 40 years, so I don't remember the names. Now, Jim Harris and Harry, that's the kind of airline Eastern Airlines was.
I loved it.
I did, too. Yeah, we took care of our own and people that were not our own because we had many other airlines that consistently knew they could get a seat in the jump seat or in the cockpit with Eastern.
We had a family.
Yeah, yeah.
It was our family.
That's so special. I feel like it's really hard to find a company like that these days.
It is. You said it.
It's really special to hear these kind of stories. It's just, even as an outsider, just listening, you really get that feeling. And like from reading the books too, it just really seems like a truly special company.
Yeah. Well, I see a Volkswagen story here. Not too long. Let me read this. It's from Marion Knight. Marion Knight. Thank you, Marion, for sending this to us. I was commuting from Pennsylvania to Kennedy in a VW Beetle. Oh, wonder if it was yellow. It was Thanksgiving Eve, and I was going home to Pennsylvania to cook for 13 family members. I was stuck behind traffic going up a big hill in Milford, Pennsylvania in a snowstorm. I pulled off into the woods and passed all, including a bus, on top of the hill. I made it home for Thanksgiving. I inquired at Milford and was told that those people were stuck for Thanksgiving and that they were invited for Thanksgiving by neighbors who lived on that hill. Don't ask me how that Volkswagen made it past everyone driving through that woods. I have long since stopped trying to figure it out. I prayed all the way through those woods, she says. So, those are a few commuter stories. We're almost out of time. And I'm going to tell you one of my, well, I see Linda. Linda has got one here. It's fairly short. I want to get hers in. Linda Lamar, she listens to us regularly. Linda, I hope you're listening to us. I want to read your commute posting on the Facebook. She said, I commuted for the majority of my years at Eastern. I commuted from San Francisco to Chicago, from Denver to Chicago, from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, to Chicago, Los Angeles to Atlanta. Then when they closed the Chicago base, I commuted from Chicago to Miami. And most of the time, I had to get from SBN. Where is SBN? SBN. South Boston.
I don't recognize it.
I don't either. To Chicago before I commute to my base. Then after I recall, I was based in LaGuardia and Kennedy. I had to get from SBN to Chicago, then commute to Atlanta and onward to LaGuardia and Kennedy. I spent at least 10 days a month just on commuting, and I sure wish I could have been paid for all the hours and days I spent commuting. Laugh out loud, she says. No wonder in retirement I am so exhausted.
Well, she's got a good sense of humor to stay laughing about it. But I found SBN is South Bend in Indiana.
Indiana, South Bend, Indiana. Yeah. I should have known that. We didn't fly there.
Right.
But she lived there.
Right. Hopefully she must have been a reader or something to keep her busy on this commute flight.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a couple of more stories, but we're about out of time. I'm going to tell you my favorite one. I commuted the last days that I worked for Eastern Airlines to Pensacola, Florida. My wife and I had sold a business in Atlanta that I operated between flights, and it allowed us to move to Pensacola, build a beautiful house on the water. So we commuted, or I commuted back and forth from Atlanta to Pensacola, and I kept a Volkswagen bus. By this time, I had bought one of those hippie buses, Beetle buses, and I kept it in the parking lot in Atlanta, and I had a blanket and pillow there, and I would sleep in it from time to time when I had excess time between my flight and getting there. But all the every time I got on a flight to go back to Pensacola, it seems like that Gail Parton, and any of the Eastern folks listening to us probably remember Gail being a wonderful flight attendant from Atlanta. But she was also from my hometown of Goldsboro, North Carolina. So we had a lot in common, especially barbecue. East Carolina barbecue is the best barbecue in the world. And so she was working that flight because she, too, lived in Pensacola. And when I got off a flight and got on a DC-9 to go to Pensacola on my commute home, she would always have a can of 7-Up or ginger ale waiting for me. And I would always take that first sip and realized it was not ginger ale or 7-Up, that it was my favorite beverage, which was called Beefeater Gin.
Yep.
But she knew I liked that, and she had it waiting for me, and I would be sitting there smiling, drinking in a uniform.
What a family.
That's my favorite commuter story. But at any rate, it's been fun, guys. It really has. Thanks so much. Harry dropped off, I think. Jim Harris, thanks for showing up even under this sickness that you have. And
I'm gonna live, but it's difficult.
Okay. Mm. Well, we'll have more coming your way in a week. Or we've not decided what we're gonna. I've missed the story I wanted to do before that we were cut off so many times, which was we were going to focus on the importance of every job with an airline. Every job was as important as a person that cleaned the airplane as to the person that ran the airline, called the CEO or the president. And we were going to talk about how people feel about their roles in their category of their work at the airlines. And I'm sure it's some people feel that their job is not as important as others, but it takes everyone working for an airline to get it off the ground and work it. So with that in mind, I'm going to put this one on and see if you remember this when you were going to the movie theaters and you were watching the cartoons. You would hear this.
Oh, yeah. Every Saturday morning.
Every Saturday morning. That's right. Looney Tunes, Woody the Woodpecker. So, folks, we're going to sign off with Merle Haggard's and the song that we have used over the years, and I never get tired of hearing it, Silver Wings.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Emily. Thank you, Harry, for being with us today. And thanks, folks, wherever you are around the world that pick us up and listen to our shows. And so we'll see you again on the radio. Here's Silver Wings. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight.
I like to sing along with their world.
Don't leave me, I cry. Don't take that airplane ride. But you locked me out of your mind and left me standing here behind. Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engine headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight. Slowly fading out of sight.
Emily, thanks a lot. See you next show.
Thank you, Neil. See you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.